So when Tolkien finally came along and started writing his fantasies, really even before World War I started, he was reaching back and tapping into this long, long, long tradition. And it's my belief that fantasy fulfills the same function in our society that the oral tradition used to fulfill. It allows us to interact with very difficult questions. It provides models and references and type scenes and formulae that we can use to communicate ideas very effectively. And it does so in a way that is easily reproduced the way oral tradition was. You can tell the story of The Lord of the Rings a lot easier than you can tell the story of Portrait of a Lady, because the two novels are trying to do very, very different things. Now, I would not go so far as to say that Tolkien is oral tradition. He sat there and wrote with a pen. We have the actual manuscripts. And he uses all the techniques that his predecessors had invented. Not just the predecessors everybody focuses on in medieval times, the Beowulf poet and the author of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight and Chaucer and so forth, and not just the Victorian writers that he was so clearly influenced by, but also the 20th century writers like James Joyce and Virginia Woolf, who were inventing new techniques. Fantasy uses all the things that modern literary technology, if you'll let me say something like that, has come up with. Flashbacks, unreliable narrators, stream of consciousness, interlace, wordplay, complex, exquisitely timed plots, the kind of things you can't do in oral tradition, but you can sit there like Tolkien did and figure out the phases of the moon for every day of your story so you can figure out what which character was seeing when they're in two different places and play them off against each other and make them parallel and create different kinds of suspense. Fantasy writers use all of that. They use the technology of the printed book. They use maps. Fantasy's famous for having maps in the books, whereas a lot of other texts do not. So all of these things are mixed with the power of the traditional epic to create something that's even better and more powerful. And that's my main argument about fantasy, is that fantasy does all the stuff that mainstream literature does, but it tries to do other things as well. Fantasy tries to get us to think about our place in the universe, to think about our place in nature, to think about our place in the world in a way that mainstream fantasy can't do, because mainstream fantasy is so tied to the world. Mainstream fantasy can't get outside the real world to look in on it and comment on it the way fantasy does. So I think you'll see in the next lectures, as we work through the history of fantasy, as we then work through J.R.R. Tolkien's contributions, and then the writers who followed Tolkien, what I think you'll see is that fantasy is deserving of as much respect as any mainstream literature. And more importantly, that even more than mainstream literature, it repays close study with an additional reward of understanding more about the way the human heart works. In the next lecture, we're going to trace the roots of modern fantasy, starting with the ancient epics, but not paying that much attention to them, paying much more attention to the roots of fantasy in the Victorian era, and looking at some of the books such as Alice in Wonderland, George MacDonald's The Princess and the Goblin, and Charles Kingsley's The Water Babies, that set the stage for what would follow.
This ends Lecture 1.